Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including 130 of the best stations in the U.S. and Canada, and XM Channel 158. On Saturday, October 30th, 2010, this is episode 713. Enjoy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all of that. If you would like to join me in this conversation, of course, you can just listen and absorb. But you can also call in, and I'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., I know some of you are. You can easily reach us outside the U.S. Just use Skype. Skype out. And you can, because it's a toll-free number, I think you can call us absolutely free using the Skype out feature. And that's a free program. So anybody can play anywhere around the world. And, you know, it's an international thing these days, isn't it, technology? It is, without a doubt, a global phenomenon. I do the show from here, from the northernmost point of Silicon Valley, if you're generous, up in the north part of San Francisco Bay. There's some debate, you know, and people, Silicon Valley is traditionally down by San Jose. It all started when Hewlett and Packard, in a garage, I think it was in the 20s, founded a company called Hewlett-Packard, made scientific instruments. Stanford, of course, is in Palo Alto. A lot of Stanford graduates formed tech companies, Intel, Fairchild Semiconductor. The semiconductor industry started there in the South Bay of San Francisco. But nowadays, you know, a lot of what's going on in the world of tech is actually happening. Well, I mean, obviously, there's Intel in Mountain View, and there's Apple in Cupertino. Although Intel's everywhere, isn't it? They have chip fabs everywhere, all over the world. And Apple makes everything in China, but the designers, the headquarters, the boss, is in Cupertino, which is near San Jose. But the new kind of internet based economy is all kind of focused in San Francisco. So is San Francisco Silicon Valley? Well, the valley is traditionally not San Francisco, but I guess in some ways it is. And now I'm up here about an hour north of San Francisco in what used to be just cow country. But there's a lot of tech people up here too. So I don't know where Silicon Valley is a state of mind, isn't it? There are people all over the world who are innovating and changing technology. Hey, a little later on, in fact, about 20 minutes from now, Steve Gibson, my friend Steve Gibson, is going to join us. He's a security guru, a wizard. We do a security podcast together called Security Now on my TWiT network. And Steve is going to let us know about something that's pretty darn scary. And anytime anybody's using an open access point, you know, you go to a Starbucks or a McDonald's or your, you know, local bakery or coffee shop or restaurant or hotel, and you're using their Wi-Fi, this directly impacts you. And it is a major security issue. And frankly, while the open access spots can fix this by putting encryption on their open access, which means you need a password, you need to log in, it seems much more likely that what we're going to see as an upshot of the security issue is a change in the way websites work, because there really does need to be a change. So we'll talk about that. Please stay tuned. A lot of blogs and a lot of security pros and certainly security software companies love to sensationalize this stuff and scare people. And I'm not here to do that, but I am here to raise your awareness. And this is one we got to talk about. We'll talk about Fire Sheep in about 20 minutes with Steve Gibson. Very interesting. I have in my hands the new MacBook Air. This is an interesting product. Apple announced this last week. This is their, I guess, their version of a netbook. And, of course, as true to Apple, it's about twice as much as even the most expensive netbooks. But, you know, in many ways, it's more desirable with an 11-inch screen, a full-size keyboard, full-size trackpad, really nice build quality, as you'd expect from Apple. In fact, Steve Jobs said, we're not going to make a netbook. They're cheesy. You know, they're cheap, yeah, but they feel cheap. And it's true, netbooks do feel a little cheap. Of course, it's nice to be able to get a $250 computer that can, you know, it's lightweight and you can carry with you and does all you need to do. But this MacBook Air starts at $1,000. On the other hand, the $1,000 version is probably all you need. It's 2 gigs of RAM. It's a 64 gig solid-state drive. One of the things I like about this, and this is true of netbooks in many cases too, there's not only is there no optical drive, no DVD or CD-ROM drive, there's no spinning hard drive in here. It's just a chunk. It almost feels like a solid chunk of aluminum. But it's fast because the solid-state drive is fast, and the processor is not super fast processor. It's a low-powered Intel chip. Faster, though, than the Atom that's used in most netbooks. And I have to say, despite the price, it's a very desirable commodity. I'm very impressed by it. In fact, I suspect it may be the last notebook computer I buy. I talked last week about the last desktop computer I bought, also an Apple product. Why do I buy Apple? Well, for a desktop, I bought Apple because it runs Windows and Mac. You know, you can buy a Windows machine, but it'll only run Windows. And I decided to buy an Apple because even though they're more expensive, yes, they do use, I think, very high quality parts, and they're the most flexible because I can easily legally run Windows and Macintosh on one system, and it runs both very nicely. So that I thought this is so powerful. This new it's an Intel Xeon based. It's the Westmere chip. It's a, you know, eight core processors, 16 threads because they're hyper-thread. I mean, this thing is a beast, 8 gigs of RAM. I thought, you know, I can't see anything happening in the computer industry that's going to change things so much that I'm going to need a new computer for at least, I don't know, it could be even 10 years. And we've heard this before, haven't we? And the same thing with this laptop. This replaces, I mean, in my mind might even replace the iPad and a more powerful notebook. This is it's so light. You could almost put it in your pocket. Almost. Apple's on a roll, but not just Apple, Microsoft too. Wow. Did you see it's interesting because, you know, a lot of economists say we're still in a slump economically, but you'd never know that if you look at how the tech industry is doing. The tech industry is just on a tear. And in fact, for the first time ever, Apple had higher revenues than Microsoft. Apple's revenues, this is for 3 months. Apple's revenues in the last quarter, I think was it $21 billion? Microsoft's revenue, also record revenue. I think they had 14-something billion. It's kind of funny when you get to numbers that big and you say, oh, they had, you know, they had incredible revenue of, let's see, their revenue was $16.2 billion. You know, the 0.2 doesn't sound like much until you realize that $0.2 billion is $200 million. So I shouldn't leave off the point. $100 million here or there, it starts to add up. $16.2 billion, that's up 25% over the year to date. And well above what Wall Street expected. Earnings per share, 62 cents. Now, the important thing to point out is that, yes, Apple had more revenue, but Apple's selling hardware, Microsoft's selling bits. Microsoft's net profit, its income went from $3.57 billion last quarter, or actually the first quarter of fiscal year 2010, to $5.41 billion in the last 3 months, almost $1 billion, $2 billion a month. Windows 7, a year old, still selling like crazy. Office 2010, brand new, selling like crazy. Microsoft doing really, really well. So I think we can safely say that the tech industry is on a roll. Xbox 360 consoles sold very well. Xbox 360 games sold very well. My friend M.G. Siegler, writing in on the tech blog TechCrunch, said, well, yeah, but their online business lost $2 billion. Actually, if you think about it, even though they lost $2 billion online with Bing and things like that, and they still made $5.41 billion, I think they're doing okay. But you see this all the time in a really big company like Microsoft. They make an investment. They're making an investment in Bing, their search engine. And yeah, it costs a lot of money up front. I think they can afford it. So very, very good year for quarter for Microsoft and Apple. Happy to hear that the tech industry is doing well. Let's see what else is going on. Have any of you purchased Office, the new Office for Macintosh? I'm just curious. I haven't, and I'm wondering, do people outside of the corporate need to buy Office anymore? You know, Microsoft offers a really good version for free of Office in the cloud. It's not as full featured as the desktop version, but it doesn't cost you anything, and it's free in the cloud. And of course, there's other competitors like Google Docs. Does anybody really need to buy Office anymore? I'd love to know what you think of that one. 8888, ask Leo. I was talking to somebody last night. She was saying, when is Microsoft going to offer Office for the iPad? And I thought, what? What? Are you insane? But then she said, no. She said that's what you need. You need a full fledged word processor and spreadsheet on the iPad. Hmm. I think there's they're telling me in the chat room, well, we also have an open version of Office. It's free open Office. That's true. I wonder, I guess Microsoft's still making money on it. Do you really buy Office? Do you need it? 8888, ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's next. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my good friends at Citrix, who make that wonderful Go to My PC product. You know, the remote access product that's going to let you enjoy your holidays this year. Enjoy Halloween. Go home early. Get more done, but not feel guilty. Try it free right now for 45 days. Go to mypc.com. Use the offer code Leo. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. If you have a comment, a question, a suggestion, we're going to go to Huntington Beach first. Mike is on the line. Hey, Mike, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Can you hear me?
Yes. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Quick question. We've noticed recently on TV advertisements by either Duracell or EverReady for a rectangular plate that you just lay four cell phones on, up to four,
right,
and it charges
right
them.
Does
that work well? Do you recommend it?
It does, but you have to. This is the thing they may not emphasize. This inductance charging, it's called. And actually, Palm put it on their Pre. And there's another company that makes these. What's the name? But you see the ads for them everywhere. But the thing they don't mention is you have to put a new back on the phone or the device.
We have the Droid X's.
So you'd have to get a special back, which they'll sell. So they sell you the pad, and then they have to get a special back. And that back, wait till you see it, it's kind of clunky.
Okay.
It's not really real pretty. You know, I love my Droid X. PowerMat. That's the thank you, Dr. Mom. PowerMat's the other company. Yeah. I love the Droid X because it's so slim and beautiful. And what you'd have to do is you'd have to take off that back, and they'd put a new back on there. Because what's happening, you know, this is like those inductance heating elements in some stoves where they don't have it uses, I guess, magnetic conduction, creates a magnetic field that does the charging and charges pretty fast, pretty much as fast as it would if you plugged it in. It's nice because you take the phone out of your pocket, you throw it on the mat, you can put multiple devices on there, but each of them will have to have a special back that will receive the power from the pads.
Got it.
They're getting smaller than they used to be, but I would look and make sure, Mike, you can live with that before you run out and get them. How do you like the Droid X? Yeah. No, so I love.
See, we have you to ask about it, and we were.
Yeah, that's right. Now I love the Droid X too, and I bought. And this is another thing I'll warn you against. I went to Verizon; they have an extended battery for the Droid X.
Right.
The normal battery they sell, I think, is 1500 milliamp hours, and the new one I think is 1800. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't make a hill of beans difference.
Really?
So save your $49. And you know, the truth is, on all of these smartphones now, they barely go a day. They go a day if you're judicious. They don't go a long day. You know, if you get up in the morning and you go out at night, they don't go from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. very well. So you got to have some charging, whether it's in your car or at your desk.
Yeah, we've learned that, but we still love the phone. So it's worth it.
It's a great phone. It's a really great phone. I think the Droid X's screen size, the functionality of Android is really fantastic. Hey, thanks for the call, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Leo. Nice talking to you. Bye-bye.
Nice to talk to you. Yeah, though I think that you know, when they did it with the Palm Pre, the back wasn't so big; it didn't have to be. But of course, they built it into the Pre initially, and you had to buy the special charging dock that you put it in. PowerMat's been around doing this a long time. In the chat room, J Dan Canyon. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Says it's a magnet with polarization in opposite of the pad. So you have a magnet in the pad and an opposite polarized magnet. You know how magnets will resist? I guess somehow that energy between the two of them is used to charge it up. Well, that was a lousy explanation. I flunk physics. Physics 101. I'm sure somebody can call and help me explain that much, much better. Karen Murphy's California. Hi, Karen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you? Gosh, I've been listening to you since Tech TV back in the 90s.
Them's was the good old days.
Those were the good old days.
That was before my hair went gray with craziness. Yes.
Are you going to be in Las Vegas next year?
I am.
Oh, good.
I'm going to be in Las Vegas for the Consumer Electronics Show, a broadcast live from there first week of January.
Okay. How does a person go about getting tickets for the consumer show?
Well, this is a fun show to go to. It's not open to the public. It's open to dealers. It's really a dealer show. But if you look around, in fact, you could Google free CES passes. It's not so hard. You know, consumer electronics companies will often figure out a way for you to get in there. So if you're interested in going, it's really fun to go, Karen. And I'm sure I'll be there for other reasons, too. You know, I went to Blog World this year a couple of weeks ago. Vegas is where all the trade shows. Are you in Vegas? Why do you ask?
Well, we're in Murphy's, right above Sacramento, but we want to go to Vegas to the show.
You want an excuse to go to Vegas, huh?
Yes.
Well, Leo's going to be there, honey. Let's go.
I know. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll do a whole week at the Consumer Electronics Show, and I'll broadcast, as I did this last year, Saturday and Sunday, I'll do the radio show from the Consumer Electronics Show. It's fun to do that because that's where you really see not so much stuff that's going to come out right then, but stuff that's going to come out later in the year. The stuff we saw in January, like 3D TVs, are now, just now, coming out, you know, all over the country. So it's kind of fun to get a sense of what's coming.
So go to Google that and see what you can find.
Google free CES tickets, and it's, you know, we're getting close enough. It's only a few months off.
Okay.
CES is a lot of fun, and the nice thing about CES is that it's really easy to get to the gambling tables because the geeks really don't. They're too busy playing with their phones. We don't want to really gamble. So sometimes you'll see it at one of these big Vegas geek conventions. They actually start covering up tables and sending dealers home. We don't really gamble much. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I understand the odds. The odds are very bad, very bad. portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Now, anyone can create his or her own professional-looking, slick website simply, easily, affordably with Squarespace.com. It's hosting plus the best software out there. I use it, my friends use it, and I want you to try it. Go to Squarespace.com. Use the code TECHGUY. You'll get 10% off the life of your account. Squarespace.com. Enter code TECHGUY for 10% off for the life of your site. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Oh, I forgot. I was going to call Steve Gibson. I got caught up. And let me see if I can get him on the horn right now. Steve is a security guru. He does our podcast, Security Now. And this week on Security Now, he was all happy and gleeful and everything. And I thought, what are you so happy about? He said, well, wait till you hear about FireSheep. Steve is the man in charge of GRC.com. That's where you can go for shields up and a bunch of great security tools. He's also the author of SpinRight, which has been around for many years, is really the hard drive maintenance and recovery utility. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, Leo. Great to be with you.
I'm so glad you're here today because I really want to talk about FireSheep. You were excited, but you were excited for kind of an unusual reason about FireSheep.
Yes, I was excited because, like all security-oriented professionals who watch what's going on the internet, I've been, and of course, you and I talk about this on our weekly podcast, continually upset by the insecurity of open Wi-Fi, that is wireless hotspots.
These are the sites that you go to, or places you, like if you go to Starbucks or your local hotel where you get online, you don't need a password, you're just online.
Right. Your computer, you turn it on and it says, oh, look, here's, you know, you can connect to this location and be on the internet.
I would say most of us use one of those every day. As we travel around.
It's incredibly convenient. But the problem is, which really people are just not aware of because they don't see it, is that their data, everything that they're doing, can be eavesdropped on very easily by a hacker. And so what you trade for the convenience of not having to like log on and know a password or anything is that other people can really capture what's going over the airwaves. So the reason I'm excited about FireSheep in a strange way is that last Sunday, this tool was introduced by some security researchers at a security conference in San Diego. This is essentially hacking for the masses. Anyone can download this. It's free. And as of the moment we're talking about this, not even a week later, 465,000 copies of this have been downloaded.
Now, I downloaded, and by the way, it is technically, well, not even technically, literally illegal to use this. It violates wiretap law, and you could get in trouble for it, especially if you hack people's accounts with it. But I went to a coffee shop where a friend of mine owns it, and I went in there, and I have Firefox installed on my laptop. I downloaded FireSheep, took me a minute, fired it up, and all of a sudden I see my name on Twitter, my name on Facebook, a picture of me on Twitter and Facebook in the sidebar. I see some other people, and all I had to do to log, and so I had a friend who was sitting next to me. I said, okay, Vanessa. She had her laptop there. I said, I want you to log into your Facebook account. She did. Now, I'm not monitoring her traffic at this point. That's not what FireSheep does. But she logged into Facebook. Her name and picture then popped up onto my Firefox. Like a buddy list. I double-clicked it, and all of a sudden, I'm looking at her Facebook. I'm logged in as her on my computer without her password, without her permission. I said, now, Vanessa, I just want to show you what I can do. And I put an update saying I just hacked your computer. And now this was with her permission because it is illegal to do this. But I did it I did it to show the owner of the coffee shop the risks that she was running by running this open access spot.
Right. So college campuses have gone insane since this was released.
Well, can you imagine? Anywhere there's an open access point.
Yes. And, you know, frat houses and libraries and free open access on college campuses, especially because college kids they're a little more, you know, prone to have fun at each other's expenses. But the reason I wanted to talk to you about this today is sort of to to spread the word that this kind of thing exists, that it's no longer necessary to be a high-end, super dark hacker person.
You could do this before. This is using something called cross-site cookie
capturing.
And yes, you could do this before, but you had to know, you had to be a skilled, using relatively skilled hacker using Cain and Abel. It wasn't that hard, but you, yes, but it wasn't that easy either.
It has created a fire, what's been called, I've been reading about it ever since we talked about it in the middle of the week, a firestorm, because it makes it so easy. I mean, you don't have to know anything about computers to
even an idiot
see,
like me could do it.
Well, I mean, literally, 465,000 people now have a copy of this, and people are now they're now seeing other people running Fire Sheep in coffee shops and in, you know, where there are open Wi-Fi access points. So who knows what they're doing? As you say, it's illegal to mess with anybody else's communications. That technically falls foul of wiretap law, but you know, what's illegal and what's being done are two very different things.
Well, and, you know, in a way, this is a bad thing because I went to my friend's coffee shop and I demonstrated it to her. And by the way, we're going to tell you in a second what you could do about this. I didn't want to go to the next door to the Starbucks because I didn't know how I'd be received. They could very easily have thrown me in jail saying, well, how dare you? So,
well, and of course, this is the trouble that Google got into when they were driving around streets capturing people's wireless that was unencrypted.
They got passwords and stuff.
They weren't doing anything with it, but it really did upset people.
So there are two ways to fix this. First, if you run an open access spot, and this is what I told my friend who runs a coffee shop, and she did this immediately. I said, go into your router and turn on WPA encryption. She did that. Now, there's a negative because people now have to have a password. So I said, just rename your access point to the name of, you know, Della, and then in parentheses, password is password. So it's okay if people know the password.
Well, that's a great idea to put the name of the password
in the SSID.
In the name. Yeah, it's very good, Leo.
So that way she, you know, everybody who gets on her network sees that and says, oh, okay, I need to enter a password. It's okay to... Because now tell me how this works. WPA isolates you so this Fire Sheep doesn't work?
Yes. Even though everybody knows the password, the WPA encryption, which is now standard across the whole industry, it's available everywhere.
On all modern routers anyway.
It does encrypt all of the traffic per user of the hotspot. Okay. So it completely forecloses Fire Sheep and any other simple sort of passive sniffing of the traffic like that. And it, as you say, it is easy to do, costs nothing. Then users one time would have to put the password in, which their computer would remember next time they were back there.
And they're protected from then. Fire Sheep won't work. Now, long term, there's a better solution. And this is why Google, just a few months ago, said from now on, all of your Gmail transactions will occur over HTTPS, secure HTTP.
Right. In fact, Facebook has responded to the release of Fire Sheep by saying, we are actively testing security for Facebook, and it's going to take us a few months, but we will then be immune to this because we will keep our own Facebook users secure from their browser to our server, and it won't matter what happens in between. And that's the change. That's the real change that Facebook and Twitter and MySpace and Amazon and everybody else who only uses encryption briefly for logon, then doesn't bother to encrypt the rest of the time. They all have to do it all the time.
So that's what's happening. Just to get a little bit technical, but that's what's happening is that if you didn't do this cookie thing, every time you went to a new page on Facebook, you'd have to re-log in. You'd have to identify yourself each time. That's a pain. So what Facebook does the first time you give it a password, it says, well, here's a token. Here's a cookie that's unique to you. And from now on, we'll just query you and say, do you have that token? And for the rest of this session, you won't have to log in again. The problem is that token is flying through the air, can be grabbed by somebody else. Once they have that token, they're you.
Yes, and that's exactly what Fire Sheep did for you when you with her permission clicked on your friend's little buddy picture. There was it grabbed her ID and you were able to impersonate her to Facebook and had full access to her account. People are, I've been reading reports of this, that people are posting Twitter messages from people they don't know and hacking each other's Twitter accounts. And there's been a lot of this going on this week. So I'm excited about this because this will force the change from companies like Twitter and Facebook and MySpace and so on. It's just been laziness and inertia that has let them leave things the way they were, never being as secure as they really can be. And this will affect that change.
Not coincidentally, yesterday, Facebook released data on how hard it was that for them to put secure HTTP on all Gmail transactions. They said, not only were we able to do this by flipping a switch, it uses very little bandwidth, very little server cycles. It is a virtually free thing to do. They said this is not an onerous burden.
You said Facebook, but you meant Google.
I meant Google. Yeah, Google's been doing it. I hope Facebook. I hope Twitter. Yelp. I was able to log into people's Yelp accounts. I mean, imagine, you know, if you were a nefarious coffee shop owner, as soon as somebody comes in and logs into Yelp, you go in and write a review for yourself under their name. Things like that.
Yeah, well, these kinds of things will occur to people, and FireSheep, unfortunately, will get used for some ill purpose, but that's what's going to create the pressure to get this fixed for the future, which is really what we need. And it took this. It wasn't going to happen otherwise.
Thank you, Steve, for calling in and raising the awareness. If you're interested, we do a great podcast on this subject. We just did one this week. If you want to know the more technical stuff, it's grc.com/securitynow is Steve's podcast site, grc.com/securitynow. We do that show every Thursday on the Twit Network. Steve Gibson is the man in charge at GRC, the Gibson Research Corporation, grc.com. And go there and get SpinRight, too, which we talk about all the time on this show. It's a great hard drive maintenance utility. Thanks, Steve, for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Leo.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll talk a little more about this and about a solution for Firefox that might be pretty cool coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number if you want to talk about tech. Dan in our chat room moderator, mentioned that there is a new plugin for Firefox. You have to be using Firefox for this. I don't use Firefox. I use Chrome. But there is a plugin for Firefox that is designed to help us with this FireSheep issue. It's called HTTPS Everywhere. And it's a collaboration between the Tor Project and the Electronic Frontier Foundation. It doesn't work with all sites, but when you install it, it will work for a large number of sites, including Facebook, Twitter, WordPress blogs, the New York Times, the Washington Post, PayPal, a lot of the sites that, in fact, FireSheep attacks. So what this does is forces HTTPS, encrypted HTTP, to be turned on at all times when you would visit these sites. And that is another way of fixing this problem. If you run an open access spot, if you're listening and you're a coffee shop or you're a hotel and you have an open access spot, that is a Wi-Fi that people don't need a password to log into, I would strongly suggest that you turn on WPA encryption. Yes, people will need a password. You could, as I suggested to my friend who runs the coffee shop, put the password in the name of your router. Because it's not important that that the password remains secret. Merely that WPA is turned on. That will do the job. Pretty scary, isn't it? Very scary stuff. As long as we're talking the scary, I'm going to get back to the phones in just a second. In fact, in just a moment, I'll talk to Tom in Anaheim. He's looking for a mic for his video. Brandon in Upland needs software for streaming. Aaron and Mark, you're on the queue too. But before we get to those fellas and gals, I'd like to talk a little bit about my friends at Nod32, as long as we're talking security. It really does seem like you got to secure yourself in a lot of different ways these days. Nod32 is the best little antivirus out there. Now, I say little not because it's small in power. It's not. It's the most powerful antivirus out there. little because it's undemanding. It doesn't slow your system down. It's not the bloatware that so many other people are creating. If you use Windows, you really need ESET's NOD 32 antivirus. Editor's Choice from CNET, who gave it 5 out of 5 stars. Not just viruses, too. It protects you against worms, trojans, spyware, adware, phishing scams even. Rootkits, the toughest of all to find and fight. And without slowing you down. You could try it free for a month. Just go to ESET.com/Leo. That's the manufacturer's ESET. ESET.com/Leo. Or you can call them 866-935-ESET. Tell them Leo sent you. If you use Windows, man, you need NOD 32. Tom, Anaheim, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, before I get to the question, I just want to put in a plug for Open Office because you were asking if anybody uses Microsoft Office these days. And I've got Open Office on my Linux machine, my Mac, my Windows machine. It works great.
Yeah, I wasn't asking if anybody uses it. I know they use it. It's the best seller. But I was wondering if anybody needs it anymore. And you're right. That's one of the reasons you don't need it is there's an open source solution. It's not as elegant. It may not have all the features, but for most people, it's more than sufficient, and it's absolutely free, and it's a spreadsheet, it's a word processor, it's a slide manager. I mean, it does all the things that Office does, pretty much. Is there an email package as well in OpenOffice?
Not that I'm aware of.
So you still would need, instead of Outlook, you'd still need to use Thunderbird or some other evolution. There are a lot of open source email packages.
I go on the internet and use what the web mail.
Yeah, nowadays, people don't seem to use desktop clients anymore. They just use Gmail or Hotmail or Yahoo Mail, and they just do it in the browser.
Exactly, especially when I'm back and forth between computers, like my Mac and my Windows and my Linux.
Right. That's more and more common. Thank you, Tom, for the tip.
So back to the question. I have this Supracam SS that we bought for work a couple years ago to do some training videos. We have on our little intranet some staff training videos that we have done, and they can be Flash or Windows media. But anyway, what the audio has always been lousy. And so what we were looking for is the my boss was asking, is there a way of plugging in a wireless lapel mic into this video camera? And I said, I have no idea. I'll have some research.
Well, the first thing you have to do is see if there is, in fact, an audio input, even a mini jack input for it. If there isn't, then you're not going to be able to do it.
All I see is a little mini USB.
Okay, that's usually, in fact, I can guarantee you that's only out, not in. So they're I generally recommend, in fact, for this very reason, camcorders that have a microphone input, whether it's a professional camcorder with an XLR, which is that big Canon plug, or many consumer camcorders, even for instance, the Kodak ZI-8, which has a little mini jack in, and then you can put, you can do exactly what you want. You could put a dedicated microphone onto there. But that's camera specific, and it sounds like your camera does not have that.
If I found a camera that had a jack like that, is there any recommendations along these?
Yeah, we use wireless mics from Sennheiser. So you buy what you'll buy, and there, by the way, this is an area where you're going to spend probably more on the mic than on the camera because cheap wireless mics are dreck. If you're willing to go wired, it's a lot cheaper. You can get a breakout box that will do what you need to do.
Okay.
That will take a standard. In fact, the cheapest way to do this is with a little It's called Beechtech, BEACHTEK. It's a little box that has a mini jack coming out of it and XLR plugs going in, and then you can get a cheap like the Shure SM58 handheld mic, which is a great mic for noisy environments. And it's cabled right into the camera. You can't get far away from the camera, but that's going to give you the best sound. Now, you said lavalier or lapel mics, and I got to point out that that doesn't give you great sound because they're far away from the mouth. It's like this. I'm now far away from my mic, and what you get is a lot of extra noise. You get the room sound and stuff. So if you're in a noisy environment, lavalier mics are not a great choice. But even an inexpensive SM58, which is a very directional mic, is going to give you pretty good sound, even in a noisy environment. That's what we use with a Beach Tech. Otherwise, Sennheiser Wireless. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Stamps.com. Why wait in line at the post office when you can print official U.S. postage for anything you mail right from your Windows PC and your printer? You don't even need special ink or anything. Just Stamps.com. Try it free. Actually, there's a no-risk trial offer with a $100 bonus, including an electronic postage scale and $45 free postage. Just go to Stamps.com, click the Try It Free button, use my name, Leo. Stamps.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, our phone number 8888-ASK-LEO if you want to participate in the conversation. We were talking about microphones on a camera. You know, it's funny, when you think of video, you always think of the picture. But the truth is, audio is at least as important as the picture in video. In fact, you can shoot a video with kind of not great pictures, but if the audio is good, you can live with it. On the other hand, shoot a video with bad audio and see how long people will watch it. It drives them crazy. So that's why it is important to look at the microphones. You can, you know, some video cameras, you can put a shotgun mic on them. A lot of the Canon cameras have a hot shoe that you can put a shotgun mic on. And that will help a lot. The better the audio, in my opinion, the better the video. And especially if you're going to make promotional videos of any kind, or you can do a video on YouTube, it's worth spending a little bit of money to get a good setup. A Beach Tech is inexpensive. I think it's about $100. And then some inexpensive microphones. That's a great start. We mentioned the Sennheiser wireless. Now we're talking hundreds and hundreds of dollars. I think $400 and then the microphones. But wireless is nice because you don't have to be wired to the camera. Jim's in here from Real Skateboards. He does a skateboard. You do skateboard videos. You get involved with the shooting of the videos. They do when they do the skateboard videos. A lot of times they do really wide angle shots, really low shots. They'll be riding along next to it. It's pretty amazing. That's kind of fun. That's a whole special kind of video. Yeah, that's fun. And I think the audio on that is probably not quite as important. As long as you hear the wheels rolling and the screams when they fall off, you're pretty much set. Aaron, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Well, thank you. Okay, so I'm doing a video crowdsourcing project called the Simultanea Project. And what it's about is getting people from all over the world to film during the same one-minute moment in time on Saturday, November 13th, and then assembling all the footage that I get into a video installation that plays.
What a great idea.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Sounds like fun.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great. And I've got like 100 people signed up so far. But
what's the website? Tell me the website so other people can sign up.
Sure. Thank you. It's www.simultaneaproject.com. And it's also on Facebook at www.facebook.com/simultanea.
So Simultanea is S-I-M-U-L?
T-A-N-I-A.
I-A Project.
Yeah.
I spelt it with an EA, IAproject.com. Neat idea. And so you're going to do an installation that will have all of these one-minute videos playing over and over again.
Yeah, and they're going to be in sync because I'm going to have people timestamp them. So they're just going to be tiled streams of footage, and everything you're seeing will have been happening exactly the same moment as everything else.
You got 2 weeks to get everybody involved.
I've been doing this for so long.
Now, you're an artist? Are you a video artist?
I'm an artist, who's not very tech savvy, but I'm working with videos, so I need all the help I can get.
Really, really neat. Well, anything I can do to help, this sounds like a great idea. You know, there's a YouTube project, I'm sure you're aware of it, where they asked everybody on the same day to send a video. It's a little less organized, a little less coordinated, you know, but they're going to get some big names to edit it and all of that.
Yeah, you know, I saw that, I read about it, and I was like, oh my God, this is just like a project. But it's different, and yeah, the final product's going to be completely different, because theirs, I think, is going to be a film. I'm going to make this an actual installation to play in a gallery, but I'm on Kickstarter, and I'm going to put a video up there to try and get some money so that I can pay someone to make a flash, you know, to with flash put something on the.
Oh, so people could do it on the web. They could see the installation on the web, in effect.
Yeah, and make it interactive, yeah. So you can hear the audio from certain.
Oh, that's neat.
Over, you know, that sort of thing.
Kickstarter is a great thing. Kickstarter.com, where people who have great ideas and want investors or donors, you say basically, if I get 500 people to give me $10 to do this, I will do it. And then if you get the 500 people, then the people who pledged have to pay.
Exactly. But if you,
it's kind of cool. Yeah. So what's the name of your Kickstarter project? Is it going to be Simultanea Project?
It's going to be Simultanea Project. It's not up there right now. So my problem, though, is the submission process. I'm asking people, obviously I want to get the highest quality of film I can get. So I'm asking people to burn their footage to a DVD and send it to me. But I also want it to be easy because, that, you know, people aren't going to take part if it's not easy. So I also want to have an upload function on the website.
Yeah, you, believe it or not, you're going to get better quality video if you do that than if you ask them to burn a DVD.
Oh, you're really?
Yeah. It seems like DVD, that's the best quality. It's not.
Okay.
Oh. In order to burn a DVD, if they make a video DVD, they have to encode it as an MPEG-2 in a certain kind of format. And while that's a good, acceptable format for movies and stuff, oftentimes people who are using video recorders are recording it in higher quality than that.
Okay.
So if you could get them to give you your data. Now, if they're going to burn a DVD, tell them, don't burn a video DVD. Put the data file that came out of your camera on a DVD. Make a data DVD. And similarly, they can upload it. The problem is, now a minute, it's not going to be that huge, but if it's really good quality, a minute could be a fairly large file.
Right.
And they may not want to upload 500 megabytes, you know.
Right. So what do you recommend? I was thinking of services like YouSendIt.
That's a good service. The truth is what's going to happen is you're going to make a recommendation, but people are going to find lots of different ways to do it. For instance, I have, and I love, a Pogo plug, which lets me put a file, large file, on a hard drive that's here, and then I send you a link to it, and you download it from there yourself.
Okay.
And that's going to be good. Unfortunately, there was a great solution for this called Dropio, Dropio, and actually, in your time frame, it's still going to be around, but the company just got bought by Facebook, and they're shutting it down in December.
Oh.
But Dropio is a good choice. They can make anonymous drop boxes that they copy their video to and just send you the link to.
Okay, and then I can send people who are signed up.
Exactly, drop.io, and it's free.
Oh, my God, that sounds great.
Yeah, and I'm really sad that it's going to be shut down. Thank you, Facebook.
Why aren't they going to keep it going?
Because Facebook really didn't want this happens a lot. In fact, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook said, we've never bought a company for the company's product. We buy it for the people. So they essentially wanted Sam Lessin, the guy who started Dropio. They didn't want the company, so they're shutting the company down, but they got Sam working for him. I think there's nothing you can do about it. It's just a darn shame.
Wow, it's kind of sad. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, actually, you know what? They're not allowing new signups, so Dropio is not a good solution. Hey, chat room, is there anything like Dropio that people could use in a similar way? Here's another one that I just found out about because I saw people tweeting, what are we going to do without Dropio? And a company called, oh boy, I don't know if I can remember it, 2DO. I'm going to have to find it on Twitter. It has a similar solution where you might even like this better. People download, I don't know. They have to download some software, but when they download the software, then they can right-click a file on their desktop and it'll give them a link they can send you. It's a public link. And as long as their machine's on, you can get the file.
Right, and then I can just take it on my end.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different choices for something like this. I wish Dropio had not gone out of business because it's really the best. The problem is you could say, oh, send it to YouTube, but then it's going to be the lousy quality that YouTube
gives you. Exactly.
You want the best possible quality. You want the quality. Basically, you want the file as it comes out of the camcorder.
Exactly. Exactly, because what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to blow some of these streams up, you know, if I get some really great shots of, like, I want people to go out in nature and, you know, the natural landscape and take images of that, because I want all of those, you know, perspectives to be a part of it, and I want to be able to zero in on some of them, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it sounds wonderful.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, Dropbox, I mean, somebody's mentioning Dropbox, but you have to sign up for an account. The beauty of Dropio is you didn't have to have an account. You just kind of did it.
With Dropbox, can I just share that with the people?
You could. You could actually, that's what you do. You make a public Dropbox.
Okay.
That's what you do. Now, Dropbox is free for 2 gigs. It'll fill up fast, so you either clear it out or you buy a 50 gig box.
Okay.
Because it will fill up fast. There you go. You create a Dropbox account, and you give them the public link that they can upload to.
Okay, cool. Great. And am I going to need to worry about formats and stuff like that?
You sure are, because you're going to get it in a million different formats. Unfortunately, video is not like audio. You know, everybody says MP3 and audio, and that's it. But video, it could be MPEG-4, MPEG-2, H.264, which is a variant of MPEG-4. It could be 80C, anyway, it could be all these different formats. ADVH, ADCHV, I can't even remember it now. There's too many darn formats. So, yes, you'll get them in all these different formats. AVCHD, thank you. Are you going to edit it, or you have somebody doing the editing? Or
I'm going to edit it, and I'm going to get some buddies to help me edit it, and it's just going to be an interesting process.
You will end up getting a number of tools that will convert any format to Final Cut or whatever format you're using.
I'm using Final Cut. Perfect.
Yeah. So Final Cut reads most of those, but you'll get some stuff in weird formats like MKV that you'll have to convert. But you'll see there are a lot of different tools that'll do it.
All right. Well, excellent.
Hey, that sounds great. I'm so glad you told me about this. Keep in touch and let us know how it's going, and then we'll look forward to seeing the final Simultanea project.
Thanks. I hope you sign up. It would be so great.
SimultaneaProject.com. Great to talk to you. Good luck. Thank you, Aaron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Ask Leo. Mark in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte here. What can I do for you today, Mark?
Hey, Leo. I was hoping you could recommend a program for me that would sift through my music collection. I've got about 100 gigs of MP3 files, and the album art's missing, and they're not named properly, and the artist information, a lot of it's unknown.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know Windows Media
Player. All in that boat. We're all in that boat, baby. Yeah. We just got a lot. You know, you just throw stuff in there. And so there are a number of really good programs that are designed exactly to do this. You're on Windows.
Yeah.
Okay. I like Media Monkey.
Yeah, you know, I remember you mentioning that like a couple years ago, and I knew
it's
it had
designed,
Monkey in the name.
Yeah, Media Monkey. It's designed to kind of be an iTunes-like replacement, a library of playback and everything, but it also has those features that you're talking about, the ability to go out to CDDB and other databases and say, what is this?
So automatically through the collection and do it itself?
Yeah.
To click on each one and have
it'll automate it.
Okay.
Because they assume that everybody, as we all do now, has hundreds of thousands of discs in here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it syncs with iPhones, which is nice, or iPods. So you don't, you know, it kind of replaces iTunes in that respect. You can use it to rip CDs. But the thing that you want is the identify track feature. It says automatically identify tracks that are missing information, whose tags are not synchronized, or that are duplicated elsewhere. That's a nice feature, too, because it's easy to get duplicates. Fix tags with automatic lookup and tagging of album art and other track information from Amazon. Look up CD information on FreeDB or via CD text and find missing track details through related sites such as AllMusic.
Okay.
And it does this all automatically. So that's kind of what you want.
I can just get it started and forget about it, because Media Player, you kind of have to click on each one individually, and sometimes it brings up a menu and you've got to select which one it is.
Yeah,
and
that's really annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Media Monkey's free too, which I like. Now, there was a great music organization tool that I plugged on Twitter and actually put out of business briefly because so many people went to it, they couldn't afford to keep the servers up. They now are financed a little bit, and they can do a little bit better job. It's called Pollux. This is another one to look at. P-O-L-L-U-X.
Okay.
And it's also another automated solution, but it's not free.
Okay.
And it works within iTunes. So if you're already using iTunes...
I try and everything.
Yeah, okay. Then MediaMonkey is a good choice. But if you're in iTunes for $10 a year, it'll automatically do your whole collection. The nice thing is once you do this, you know, you don't have to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's so disorganized right now. I just kind of, sometimes I just enjoy listening to my unknown files because it's...
Yeah. Oh, I have that song. I had no idea. I know exactly how you feel. Anybody who has a lot of music has that problem. I think MediaMonkey's the best in this case. It's really great.
Great. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for the recommendation.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it, Mark. Derek, Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi, Derek. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Big fan. Thank you for taking my call. I'm even able to look past the fact that you're a Giants fan.
I'm wearing my Giants uniform. Well, you're in Knoxville. Who are you? Are you rooting for the Rangers in the World Series?
Oh, no. I am originally from Orange County, and I am a Dodgers fan.
Oh.
I bleed blue, so I'm sorry if that's going to cause you
on
me.
Hey, that's all right. As long as you're not an Anaheim Angels fan.
No, the Anaheim Angels of Long Beach next to Corona? No.
Where are they from? They're the ones who knocked the Giants out last World Series, and I remember going to that game with my son, and it was a sad time for us all. Let me tell you something. The Giants haven't won a World Series since 1954, before I was born. I've watched them lose many a time, watched them been swept, knocked out. So just once. We just want one. That's all, okay?
I can't blame you. I think everybody.
Yeah, just one. And then you guys can have it again. I don't care. Dodgers can win for the rest of the year.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Rest of the decade.
At least the aesthetic.
It's so rare that, you know, Giants aren't, you know, a horrible team, and we're not like the Cubbies or something where we've just suffered for decades, but it's been a long time.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But the reason I called, first I wanted to tell you, as a graduate student at University of Tennessee, I find that office is actually almost invaluable to me. I do a lot of work with sequencing and things like that, and so it's a lot easier to use office than it is some of the open source. But I do.
Yeah, I think if you're in a collaborative environment, for instance, the tracking that's built into Office is great. Mm-hmm. If you write for publication, almost everybody requires an Office doc file.
Yeah, and that's where it's invaluable to me. I do keep open source specifically for PowerPoints because we have a lot of professors that use Mac. And so this TIFF compression issue that goes from Mac to Windows.
That's interesting.
And especially in entomology, which is the department I'm in, you don't get very far if you can't see what you're looking at. So,
you know, you'd think in academia that open source would be embraced more.
You'd think. It's not always, unfortunately.
Yeah. Interesting.
But, the real question I had is I'm a master's student here at UT, and I'm trying to get more into bioinformatics and doing a lot of like sequence manipulations and alignments.
Well, you couldn't pick a better field to be in these days, I think. I mean, that's really where the future is.
Yeah, it's rapidly changing, and, you know, I find new things every day. The problem I'm encountering is that in order to do a lot of the sequences that I work with that are very novel, that no one really has, I need to do a lot of coding. And I am not yet well-versed enough in coding, and it seems that everyone, whether it's in our department or somewhere else, seems to...
You got to write your own software, don't you?
Yeah.
Hang on. We'll talk about this. One of my favorite subjects. Stay tuned. We'll talk some more after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll be right back. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. Automatic, off-site, and very affordable. I want you to try it free for 2 weeks. You tell me. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo. That's good Halloween music you got there. Kind of scary. Leah, Tammy's on the board. She's picking the music here today. Rebecca Baker on drums and on phones as well in the behind the scenes. So we were talking to Derek, who is a graduate student at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. And he is studying, you're an entomologist, right, Derek?
I'm in insect physiology.
But you're also very interested in genetics.
Yes. My project, without getting into too much laborious detail that no one's really going to care about, is identifying genes from insects that produce different proteins and using those for biofuel production.
Oh, how interesting. So you could perhaps genetically engineer a bug that might make fuel.
Yeah, or we're able to take the proteins that they produce and use them in the process of, breaking down the substrate.
The fuel. Wow, isn't that exciting? I really have a feel. We're in the middle of the information revolution, the digital revolution, computers and the internet and so forth. But that revolution is now, kind of in full swing. And I think we're really coming up against the bioinformatic revolution, the kind of the merging of biotech and information. I can only imagine what the world's going to look like for my kids, in 10, 20, 30 years, as we start to really understand the genome and are able to engineer it and do this kind of sequencing that you're doing. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it all started with the Human Genome Project that President Clinton put in act. And I think, they were looking at billions of dollars to sequence a single human genome. And now it's down to tens of thousands of dollars to do a human genome. So it's orders of magnitude.
Oh, yeah.
The technology's improved over the last several years. So
my biotech friends say it's just a matter of a few years before you'll be able to go into a drugstore and buy a gene sequencing kit for yourself, mm-hmm. send it in, and then they can say, well, you're prone to, Tay-Sachs syndrome, so you should be taking care of this, and, maybe you should worry about it. I mean, we're on the precipice, I think, a brink of a total revolution.
Yeah.
However, let's help you get there.
And that's where my issue is. I mean, everyone has their own set of, what they want to do as far as coding or how to run programs. And, I've picked up using Linux relatively quickly. But as far as the coding aspect goes, there's so many different options.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting because in science now, and for the last maybe decade or so, computation has become very important. Even in math, even in pure sciences like math and physics, computations become very important. And for the most part, scientists end up writing their own programs.
Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to find is the easy, not necessarily the easiest way, because I'm not the kind of person that likes to take the easy route. Of course, I like to go as complex as humanly possible, which puts me in a bad spot sometimes.
Let's make it easy. I would start with a language called Python. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, I've. It's one of the ones that a lot of people use. I just wasn't sure what was going to be my best route.
Now, here are the advantages to Python. It's used, by the way, by Google heavily, by NASA heavily. Lots of scientists use Python. It's fairly clean in terms of readability. Perl is also very popular, but tends to be less readable. Python's a scripting language. It's not like C or C++ or Java. It's a scripting language, which means it's more like BASIC. You can write in the Java and in the Python interpreter, you can write a line of code, hit return, and it will give you the result.
Okay.
So that's one reason I think scientists like it. It's like a very elaborate calculator. You can write a routine in the interpreter, load it, and then run it kind of manually by entering in data and getting a result out of it.
Okay.
So that's why I think scientists really do love Python. It's also free. It runs on every platform. It's open source, and it's well supported by books, libraries. There's if you look at the Python libraries, there are tons of scientific libraries. That becomes very important for you. In fact, truth is, I'm the wrong guy to ask. You should probably ask around in your discipline and say, where are the best, what are the best libraries written for? Are they written for Perl? Are they written for Python? In most cases, I think Python is probably the best.
Yeah, and that's, I've heard that, but the problem, we have people that write in every, you know, they all have their, you know, everyone's.
Yeah, unfortunately, everybody has their favorite.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's the way everything is, but, that, you know, I, you know, go to the voice you trust, I guess.
Well, like I said, I'm not an expert in your field. I would take a look at BioPython at biopython.org, which is, this is a tools for biological computation written in Python. And because these are libraries, you hook into them. Once you understand Python, which is very easy to learn, you can learn in a day, especially if you've ever done any programming, it's very easy to learn. Then you can hook into these libraries, and a lot of this stuff is already written for you.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. So I think this is a very good choice. A lot of scientists use Python. I would say it's probably most widely used of all of them.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, that'd be great, and I appreciate the input.
Yeah, a great book, Learning Python from O'Reilly. I have a dozen Python books. I'm a big fan of Python. But Learning Python is the one to start with, I would say. It's written by, I think, Guido von Rossum, the guy who created Python, wrote it. It's just really excellent. O'Reilly has a whole series of very good Python books.
Excellent.
Thanks for the call, Derek. Good luck.
Thank you much.
You're working in a fascinating field. I'm really jealous. I told both my kids, and I think Abby might be a little interested in this. If you really want to be in the cutting edge of science and changing the world, but right now, genetics is it. It's where it's happening. We're going to take a little break. We got many, many more calls. I'm glad Derek's in the chat room, by the way, if you want to talk to him. He's at irc.twit.tv. In fact, the best thing to do if you want to participate in the show, besides calling, is visit our website, techguylabs.com. You'll find links to the live video feed, the chat room, and, of course, all the notes from the stuff I talk about on the show. That's techguylabs.com. Ron's coming up. He wants to go hands-free. Brendan, I mentioned him before. He's still looking for that software for streaming. And Linda in Glendora, she says, a worm is blocking my internet access. Before we get there, though, I do want to talk a little bit about backing up your data. You know, when I hear things like a worm has infested my computer, first thing I think of is I hope you have a backup. I hope you've got your data somewhere safe, because worst case scenario, you know, you start fresh. Your data is what you really care about. That's the thing that you can't reproduce. That's the thing. There's there's only one copy of it, unless you've got a good backup. Now, it's great to back up to an external hard drive, and I encourage you to do that, but it's not enough. What if there's a fire, a flood? Think of what you've got on your hard drive now. You'd lose it all. Carbonite.com. It's the way to back up pictures and other important files on your computer. You don't have to be a geek. You just have to go to Carbonite.com, type in your email address, create a password, type in my name, Leo, for the special offer, and you're done. You're backing up right now. And those files are available to you anywhere you can get online. There's a free iPhone app, a BlackBerry app. You can even just log on any computer to your Carbonite account, and there's your stuff. You never are at risk of losing your data again. It actually helps you sleep better at night. How much is this incredible service? Less than 15 cents a day. $55 a year. And you know what? In Mac or PC, and if you use my name, Leo, you'll get 2 months free, so it's even more affordable. Stop worrying about your data. Protect it. Go to Carbonite.com. Start your 15-day free trial right now. No credit card needed. And then use the offer code Leo to get 2 months free if you decide to buy. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right. Carbonite. Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Just do it. In the words of Ben Stiller, do it. Just do it. Ron in Stockton, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Hey, you know, I own a home inspection company here in Stockton, and one of my goals, I don't know why I would want to do this to myself because my life's complicated enough, but I'm going to go ahead and try to go live with the walkthrough process of the home inspection.
Great idea. Great idea. See, one of the things that everybody says, oh, you know, nobody's gonna be interested in what I do. But you know what? This is what the internet is so great about, is taking all these different abilities. Everybody's got something that they know or they're good at, and share it with the world. That's what makes the internet so great. So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, two-part. You know, obviously, it's nice to be able to broadcast on your own website once in a while that what you're doing. But
it does. In fact, that's what I tell everybody. Every business says, oh, we want to have a website. And I say, well, okay, fine. But what are you going to do to make it more than just a brochure? And putting content like that on there is brilliant, Ron.
Oh, it'll sell it.
Absolutely. They're gonna say, "There's Ron. He's brilliant. I love him. He's good. I want him for my home inspection."
Yeah, then you know, makes it harder for the other guy to catch up to you.
That's right. I like how you're thinking, Ron.
The other thing is obviously there's times where people are at work or they're purchasing homes from another state, and being part of the walkthrough process is a little more intimate than just receiving a report. And I want to be able to go live and be able to do that. Now I've pretty much worked out the or can even refine the process of getting it to my netbook from wirelessly from like a head cam or something like that.
Isn't that interesting? So you'd be like on the phone with your client there at work, and you say, "Let me show you the rotted out attic here."
Exactly, and I have like the USB wireless camera that I can actually transmit to the USB receiver on my laptop, so I can get around the property. I figured that end of it out, and the quality.
Good.
Not the best, but I can obviously work on that.
Bring lights. Go to we use these LED lights. They're you can buy a little inexpensive micro LED light. Lightpanels.com, L-I-T-E panels.com. And the light's going to, especially for you, because you're going to be crawling in crawl spaces and all over. You need good light. That'll make that camera work so much better.
Yeah. Okay. So the light thing, obviously, because when I'm in a lit room, I got it. I mean, that's not a
right.
And the huge issue I think I'm having right now is I'm out in the field and I'm at the mercy of a 3G or 4G USB mobile network of some sort.
Right.
And getting the video in real time to the website or to a person on the other end, and I've tried a few things, the MikoGo, you see what's on my desktop thing, and also like Ustream, but the delay, it's just, I guess it's the refresh rate, I guess.
Yeah, so you really raise an interesting point, and this is why Skype is so popular. Skype is tuned for a two-way conversation, which Ustream and all these other solutions are not. I would make a Skype call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Yeah, these light panels are really a kind of cool solution. They're LED lights. It's what we use in the studio because they're low power, they're cool. They don't, you could put a couple batteries in there and shoot all day. And they give you a lot of light in a situation like if you're a home inspector where you're really working in the dark. A lot of times cameras, even a USB camera will really benefit from having a lot of light. Digital cameras are not good in low light situations. They get grainy. They get, the colors get desaturated. So if you can give them a lot of light, it'll make a big difference in the quality of the image as you shoot it. Brendan in Upland, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brendan.
Hi, Leo.
How you doing today?
Good.
So what can I do for you?
My question, you've actually helped me a lot previously in the past with my comments and recommending Squarespace, so now my website is now on Squarespace.
Hey, what's the site, Brendan?
BrendanGeary.com.
B-R-E-N-D-A-N?
D-E-N.
D-E-N.
G-E-A-R-Y .com.
And you help people, as I remember. Oh, yeah, that's right. You're doing look, this looks so much nicer, Brendan, than when we talked last time.
Yeah.
That's gorgeous. The Squarespace site is gorgeous.
Thank you.
So Brendan's website is called Experimental Aviation Division. I am relentless. I don't give up. And you did a space balloon, and now you're doing what? A rocket?
I'm doing the same. I have tabs on all my projects that I'm doing.
You did the trebuchet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
My space balloon right now, we're working right now to launch on November with HD video to 100,000 feet.
Wow, that's neat.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool. You are a crazy person, Brendan.
It gives you a view that very few people can see. It's really amazing.
Now, you know, I'd love to see if you went to Ustream or Justin TV and did a live stream of the launch and everything. Have you thought about doing something like that?
That's what I called about today, because
okay.
I'm trying to do video live using the same system that we use to track it. We could stream video back down and then put that on the internet. But that's
yes.
That's still in the process.
But a little difficult to get it from the balloon because, it's kind of far away.
Yeah.
But you certainly could get a camera from the ground. I think people would watch. You know, it's like people watching a shuttle launch.
Yeah.
We'd be very interested. So both Ustream and Justin offer programs you could put on a camera phone, like an iPhone or an Android phone, that will let you stream from the phone. That's the easiest to do because you've already got the 3G connection on the phone.
Yeah.
Justin TV has a great little app. Gives you, I think, pretty good results. If you want better quality, you need a dedicated bandwidth. You know, you need either Wi-Fi or Ethernet. And I don't know if you'll have one out there in the field.
We actually have a MiFi. And would that cover that?
It's exactly the same. I mean, a MiFi or the camera built into your phone over 3G is going to give you exactly the same results.
Yeah, and is there like we have an HV20 on the ground, and I was wondering
okay.
if there's a way that we can plug that into a computer or web.
You bet.
Somehow set that.
You bet. Ustream has a Ustream producer program you can download, or you can use Flash Media Encoder. Both of those are free. And the neat thing about Ustream and Justin, they're free to use. So you can have a million people watching. It doesn't cost you anymore. You'll connect the laptop to the MiFi, which will give you 3G access. You connect the HV20 via FireWire to the laptop. Is it a Mac laptop?
Yes.
Okay, that's good because that has the FireWire and the drivers, so it'll see the camcorder just fine. You'll want to try this ahead of time. For instance, there's settings you have to change on the camcorder to make sure that it works fine. You know, you have to make sure that it's...
Yeah,
Little tweaks, you know, that the video's coming out of it and so forth. But I've used HV20s to stream video. You absolutely can do that. We actually use HV40s, the big brother, to stream video all the time.
Yeah, and also as a kind of like a thank you, that I sent you a picture of one of my pictures from the balloon that we had launched earlier. And I was wondering if you received that.
Where did you send it? Did you send it to the radio station?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so they'll send it to me someday.
Oh, okay.
If you want... I don't... The radio... The you're listening probably to KFI in Los Angeles. Which station are you listening to?
I just called in. I'm not listening.
Okay, so if you send it to KFI in Los Angeles, I'm in Northern California. They kind of wait until they have a bunch of stuff, then they'll send a big package. If you do want to mail me something, the best thing to do is to mail it to Box 1018. That's 1018, Petaluma, California, Petaluma, California, 94953.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that goes directly to me.
And also, what's the cool thing is that we use what's called ham radio to track the balloon. So what's
wow.
That we couldn't really get video from the balloon is that if we it's called slow scan television. You hook up your camera
right.
to a ham radio, and it will send right. the information back down
right.
to you, and then from
probably uses packet radio to do that. It's slow. It wouldn't give you full motion video, but you'd get images.
Yes, that's what we're planning to do. Then also do that from the ground. This is what the balloon is seeing, and this is what.
Oh, I want to watch this broadcast. If I follow you on the website, I'll be able to get the details of when you're doing it.
Yeah, we're actually doing
awesome.
On the 6th,
awesome.
November 6th.
Oh, man. Well, I'm so glad you called in so we can give you a little plug. And call in next week again. We'll give you another plug.
All right.
That's fantastic. So BrendanGeary.com, BrendanGeary.com. We'll put that in the show notes at TechGuyLabs.com. And we'll be watching November 6th. Good luck, Brendan.
Yeah, and my dad is just now informing me that we actually send it to your cottage.
Good. If you send it to the cottage, I will get it.
Oh, okay. All right.
When did you send it?
A few days ago.
Oh, I probably, you know, I'll check my mail right now. It's probably there right now. Thank you, Brennan. Good luck. Congratulations. It sounds like this kid's going to MIT. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme. For high-speed internet at an amazing price, call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We're talking about technology, computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater in the works, you know, all that stuff. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you'd like to talk about it, I'd like to talk about it with you. 888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., just use Skype out and call me. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Let's see here. We have lots of calls. And the next one, person who's been holding on the longest, is Linda in Glendora, California. Hi, Linda. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey, welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
How are you?
I'm good.
I have the ThinkPoint Worm on my computer.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Linda.
I know. And oh, I got it from trying to access LimeWire, and it told me that I had no access to LimeWire and that I had to download this update to use LimeWire, and that was the worm.
Oh, you see? They trick you.
Yep.
Bad guys need to somehow trick you into running a program.
Yep.
And the running of the program is what infects your computer. Now, unfortunately, there are flaws in operating systems and computer programs that sometimes can get you infected without you even doing anything. But usually you have to do something to get infected. And you did. They tricked you. They said, oh, you've got a problem. You can't get on LimeWire. But here we have a fix for you. You ran it and now you're dead.
Exactly. And what it did, this particular worm, is it blocks you from accessing the internet, and it blocks you from seeing your external drives, so you can't download any antivirus software. Oh, and it goes in and turns off your antivirus software, too.
Right. So the deal with this is they're going to blackmail you.
Pretty much.
Because they say, well, we could fix this for $39.
What it does, it comes up and asks you for your credit card number to fix it.
Right. And how much did they want?
$79.
Whoa! And by the way, there's no guarantee that they'll only take $79, is there?
Well, and that's what I was concerned with, one of the things.
Well, first of all, don't give them $79.
Pardon?
Do not give them any money.
No, not at all.
Good. All right. You weren't considering buying this, were you?
No, not at all.
Oh, whew. Thank you.
To get my credit card number.
It actually may not be. They may merely bill you $79 and remove the virus.
Oh,
but that's extortion, right? So what they've done is they've damaged your ability to use your computer. This is very common now. This is a new way of extracting money from people. Probably most people fall for it. So it's a series of attacks. The first attack scares you by saying you've got a virus. And antivirus 2009 works like this. There's a whole host of these. They work like this, but they say, you've got a virus, but I have the cure. Download it for free. You run it, and now you really do have the virus. And then this one is a little extra little annoyance, which is, oh, yeah, you seem to have infected your machine there, but we could fix it for a small fee. I mean, these guys deserve to go to jail forever. They won't, because they're not in the U.S. They're, you know, they're in most of the time in the Eastern Europe.
Well, what I did is I tried to run the computer in safe mode. I was able to click past and shut down the computer, restart it in safe mode. but then it won't, I can't get any antivirus software to load up, and I tried.
Won't help you anyway.
Okay.
Because at this point, it's your machine is.
Am I in deep trouble?
Yeah, it's over. You have to. People often want to say, well, I could just run an antivirus and disinfect this, right? No. Probably not. Because what happens, a couple of things happen. First of all, these guys bury themselves so deep in your system that often removing them means breaking your system. Even if you could successfully remove them, you don't have any assurance that they haven't put other stuff on there. A lot of times what happens when they, by the way, that's why if you paid them $79, even if they turn them that, you know, the ThinkPoint thing off, you still may have all sorts of, in fact, I guarantee you, you have all sorts of stuff you don't know about. Because the second payoff for these guys is getting your computer to be part of their bot army without your knowledge so that they can use your computer to send spam or to attack other systems and so forth. I mean, you probably got the virus in the first place from somebody else's co-opted computer. So, yeah, so they don't want you to remove them, and they're going to do everything that they know to keep you from doing that, including hiding themselves, burying themselves, you know. So really, while there are people, and you could take it to the Geek Squad, and they say, oh, for $80, I'll fix it. And maybe they'd remove some of the stuff, but there's no guarantee they've gotten everything. And you're now going to have this fear of, well, every time I enter my credit card, is somebody watching? So really what you have to do, and any security expert will tell you this, is you have to burn it to the ground. You have to format your hard. Well, here's the steps. It makes it sound easy. It's not. Back up your data, format your hard drive, reinstall Windows from a known good source, run Windows Update till you have every possible fix and update and cure. That's very important. Then install, turn on the firewall, have a firewall on your router, and install any security software you want to use, then restore your data. And then from now on, and this is really important lesson for everybody to listen to you, and I really thank you for allowing me to use you as an example, Linda, because this is an easy thing to do. I don't blame you at all. But anytime anybody gets a pop-up saying you have a virus, you got to stop and think. Because all a bad guy needs to get you to do is run their program. And so they're going to do everything in their power to get you to run their program. Once they do, you're dead.
Well, and it came up with the Windows symbol, the four-colored symbol.
Oh, it looks real.
It's exactly like Windows.
There's no, yeah, of course it does. That's easy.
And my husband's listening at work, so he's
fuming.
He's like, I told you so.
Now, by the way, don't use LimeWire because it's just going to happen again. Because the other thing that happens is what these bad guys do is, so you're using LimeWire to download music, but they just put something that looks like it's music, and instead it's a virus.
Oh, yes. Now, can you recommend another service that is similar?
Yeah, pay for it. Because LimeWire is stealing. You understand that. That's not a legitimate service. That's why there's all this piracy and stuff going on in it.
Oh.
Yeah, LimeWire is stolen music. That's why it's free. So if you're getting music from a legitimate source like iTunes, Rhapsody, Amazon, you're not going to get a virus from that because you're getting it from a reputable source. LimeWire, you're getting it from anybody who wants to put a file on his system and say, here, take it. Well, half the time, that's going to be a bad guy.
This is very solemn news.
Solemn news. Solemn news. I don't even know if you can still get LimeWire because, of course, they got sued for hundreds of millions of dollars by the record industry, and they may be gone by now.
Oh, I see.
But there are plenty of people to take their place.
Well, and as a faithful listener, now I know to use a lot of the things you've recommended, like Carbonite and...
Yeah, see, if you have Carbonite backups, this makes it a little easier because at least your data is already safe. But I think you really do have to reinstall Windows. I hate to say this, but you really do.
Okay. Well, my husband's hearing you, so I guess that's what we'll be doing this evening.
What's his name?
Gary.
Gary, you have my deepest sympathy. It's not Linda's fault, though. You know, this could happen. In fact, Gary, don't gloat because this could happen to you next. Then Linda gets to gloat. Right? It happens to everybody. I've almost clicked on that. It's very easy. And just now you know, whenever you see that warning, don't assume that that's from Microsoft.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate all your help.
Sure, Linda. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings. But, you know, at least you didn't lose any data. You know, I mean, it could be a lot worse. And it's, you know, it's an afternoon's work to reinstall Windows. And, you know, the nice thing about all of this is, your system's going to run nicer because you're getting rid of a lot of cruft and old installed stuff and you're starting with a fresh install. If you haven't yet upgraded to Windows 7, this would be a good time to upgrade to Windows 7. I'm so sorry. We got to do one of those every week, right? Just to remind you. The way this happens is there's two ways a bad guy can get on your system. One is by getting you to run his program, whether it's an attachment to an email that looks like a picture, not a program, or by clicking a link, or by, you've got a virus, here's the fix. They've got to get you to run a program, or they have to take advantage of a flaw in the operating system or your PDF reader or some other program that allows them to, in effect, run a program without your permission. That's why whenever Microsoft offers those system updates, those critical updates, that's what they're fixing. These flaws in Windows that allows a bad guy to work his ways with you without you saying yes. So you want to make sure the key to keeping a secure system on any platform, Windows, Mac, Linux, is always, always, always applying those critical security updates that the operating system manufacturer and other software manufacturers like Adobe, when they make those available, you get them right away and you install them right away. Always keep your system well patched. That's your responsibility. And then kind of having a mistrustful point of view and saying that somebody's giving me something. Well, let me think, what could that be? Could this person be a bad guy? Stick with big name companies when you buy stuff or you download files, because you're much safer there. You should have a firewall and turn on the Windows firewall or the Macintosh firewall, the Linux firewall. That's a good first line of defense. It's great to have a router. That's even if you're not sharing your internet access, that's what routers are usually used for. They're dumb. And so if they're the thing that's connected to the internet, they just kind of bounce stuff off, right? A bad guy tries to get to your system, the router goes, I don't know, and bounces it. So that's why you want that dumb box be the first thing that's attached to the internet, not your smart computer. So get a router. That's a great solution too. Good antivirus is always nice to have. It's kind of a second line of defense, but it's valuable. Sorry, Linda. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. We'll have some happier calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater. Tomorrow I'll give you my review of the Google TV. I bought one of those Logitech review boxes for $300. I'm really torn between sending it back and just kind of living with it for a while. I wouldn't run out and buy one, let's put it that way. But I'll give you the full review tomorrow. I didn't really review the MacBook Air, which I have in my hot little hands, this 11-inch MacBook Air. But, I mean, really, there's nothing to say except it's great. It's awesome. Love it. So light, so tiny. And yet it's not, it feels fast. It's interesting because it isn't a fast processor. One of the reasons the new MacBook Air feels so fast is it isn't using a standard hard drive. It's using a solid-state drive, an SSD, they call them, which is essentially the same kind of flash memory you use in your camera for a hard drive. But it's optimized. It's speedy. It's faster than a regular hard drive. And so the operating system boots in 15 seconds. The programs launch in less than a second. And so it turns out a lot of the speed of a computer, the perceived speed of a computer, is not how fast it's computing, but how fast it's loading things on off of disk. In the parlance of computer science professors, much of what we do is I/O bound, not compute bound. That means it's bound by the speed of the input-output system, how fast memory hard drives are read, not by how fast the processor can compute something. Most of what we do nowadays, the processors are more than fast enough to do the arithmetic. It's how fast the hard drive is. A lesson to be learned, if you want to speed up your computer, getting a faster drive might really be the way to do it. In fact, it's too bad SSDs are so expensive. They are, three or four times more expensive than a spinning hard drive. But if you want to take a computer and really speed it up, I put one into one of my other laptops. It just makes a huge difference. It just, it's amazing how much time we spend waiting for the hard drive these days. Rick in Irvine, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rick.
Hi there, Leo. I have a question or problem regarding using Outlook with Microsoft Live Hotmail.
Mm-hmm.
I currently keep getting synchronization errors and can no longer receive incoming email, although I can send properly through Outlook. And I'm not sure. I keep reading a few things online that say to try to reinstall it using the Outlook connector to establish the Hotmail account when it was first set up, but nothing seems to be
resolved. You're still using the connector, right?
That's right.
Hmm.
So there was another, you know, I tried re-downloading the connector and there was a repair option that I tried, but that didn't seem to correct anything. And
yeah, I'm not sure. I don't work that way. I do know that you need the connector to work with Hotmail because Hotmail is not a traditional POP or IMAP server.
Right.
And it is the connector that is making that connection. So those errors you're getting are coming from the connector. Okay. But I'm not sure what the fix is. Dr. Mom in our chat room says that maybe if you remove and re-add the account, that will help.
The only thing I've seen is that seems to be the suggestion. Do you know if you do remove that account and then re-add it, doesn't it have to then re-download all of your data from the server onto your local Outlook?
That's a good question. I don't think so, because I think it'll see the files that already are there and won't re-download them.
Oh, it will. So it will compare against the existing OS.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is really just, you know, kind of a unfortunate limitation of Hotmail is that it doesn't support standards.
Right.
Which is very, very annoying. You know, if you use, instead of Outlook, if you use Windows Live Mail, you know, it'll work better. But if you need Outlook, then the connector is your only choice.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can go to the web and do the Windows Mail through that, and that's
right.
Fine. But, you know, I think
every other system, including Yahoo and Gmail, uses standards, use POP and IMAP. But Hotmail, which is I think is one of the oldest webmail solutions, wasn't a Microsoft solution at first. It was, it was just this company called Hotmail. Microsoft bought them. I think that they just never really updated it.
Okay. Okay. Well,
so try removing that account and reinstalling it. That has a couple of advantages. One, it makes sure all the settings are right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I would
try then.
Thanks, Rick. That's the suggestion of the chat room. When I say Dr. Mom is suggesting something, that's she's in the chat room. You can get in the chat room, by the way. Our website is techguylabs.com, and there's a link to chat there, also a link to the live video. There are podcasts of the shows every week. And most importantly, all the links to everything I talked about, thanks to James DeRuvo, who writes this stuff down. Scribble, 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 as I say it. Ron in Barstow, California. Hey, Ron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, Ron.
Leo.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I love your show.
Thank you very much.
All right. Hey, I got a couple of questions. Circulating around the iPad type market now. Have you seen the Arcos tablet?
Yeah, I like Arcos. They've been around a long time. They've been doing this for a long time. They have an Android tablet out now. Right. For a long time, they had their own operating system.
That 10.1 that's come out, have you seen that yet?
Yeah, I'm not knocked out.
Okay. I've been going over the iPad for a while.
Want an iPad, still you should get an iPad. Maybe we'll see some competitors catch up as they did with the iPhone, but not yet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll be right back. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866 the number 2 GetNet. Get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Tanny is in North Hollywood, California. Our next caller. Hi, Tanny. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I love your show when I can listen to it. I have a repetitive stress injury in my shoulder, and goes down to shooting pain in my forearm and the top of my right hand. I've been programming for about 30 years.
And oh, boy.
Told me that I have to stop work, which I don't like because I like what I do. So I was wondering what options were available for me to continue to be able to work with without having the huge amount of pain I've been having for the last, 10 years.
There are voice dictation solutions, and a lot of people with carpal tunnel use Dragon Naturally Speaking, which is an excellent program. I think for a programmer, that's interesting. I don't know if they have a programmer's module. I bet they do. In a way, it'll work more effectively and be more accurate with any constrained vocabulary. It's more effective. For instance, physicians use voice dictation all the time. Radiologists will dictate the reading as they read the X-ray, and it's usually very accurate because it's a constrained vocabulary. It's a medical vocabulary, and so it does a good job. And I would imagine. I would check with Nuance, who makes Dragon, and see if they have a programmer's vocabulary, a programmer's dictionary in the language. What language do you usually write in?
A variety, a little Java, a little JavaScript, some HTML.
Yeah.
C.
I think that's probably the best way to do it. Dina says yes, they do have a programmer's dictionary.
Okay.
Then you would literally speak your program. You're going to have to relearn. I'm sure I would almost guarantee that there is a brain hand synapse connection that means that, you know, you think best while you're typing, I would guess. So you might have to relearn that. I bet you will.
Mm-hmm.
But, on the other hand, it's better than not working.
Yeah. Workman's comp only lasts about a year, and I make more money programming than I do on workman's comp.
Now, of course, there's always a demand for managers.
Pardon me?
There's always a demand for managers, programmers who know how to manage other programmers.
I have done that in the past, and I have been thinking about that.
Yeah. It's not as much fun, though, is it?
No. It's a lot more actually creating.
And I presume that you've got the braces and all the things that the doctors told you to do for the carpal.
Braces, the special keyboard, the special mice, the trackball. I mean, we've tried them all. Each one reduces the pain a little, and then the pain comes back after a while.
Oh, man. Just think of all the keystrokes you've typed with those hands over 30 years of programming.
Millions of lines of
millions, yeah.
Yeah.
It's it's funny because sometimes I love programming. I think it's one of the best hobbies, one of the most exciting intellectual processes you could do. But it's a lot of typing. It's a ton of typing. And I'm not surprised that eventually after 30 years, you might have some repetitive stress injuries.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that this is the thing that most people end up using is they end up using dictation software. The best, there's just no question, the best out there is Dragon Naturally Speaking. It's the most accurate. It's the most reliable. It's a shame because, you know, there was a time 15 years ago when there were many competing products and they, you know, competition's good. It keeps prices down, keeps innovation up. It's always good even as an individual to have somebody you're competing against. It makes you better than you would be otherwise. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any competition anymore in speech recognition. Nuance makes it. I would go to their site, nuance.com, and see if they have something, you know, for Java and that kind of thing. It'll be almost perfectly accurate. If all you're doing is typing Java code, you know, there's what, 20 or 30 keywords and numbers. It'll be almost exactly what you want. That's easy to do. It's much easier to do that than English. English is tough. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go to Missoula, Montana. where Blake wants to upgrade to Windows 7, but he wants some advice before he does it. I have some suggestions for you, absolutely. Before we do that, though, actually, this could be one of those suggestions, Carbonite. A lot of people, when they upgrade their operating system, will use Carbonite to back up their data, upgrade the operating system, then log on to their Carbonite account and restore the data. It's a good way to move from computer to computer, too. Carbonite's such a great solution for consumers that a lot of small businesses use Carbonite. In fact, that's what inspired Carbonite to create Carbonite Pro. See, it turns out that as good as Carbonite is for consumers, Carbonite Pro is designed for small business and it has some of the features small businesses want. Same idea, which is you back up to the internet whenever you're online, doesn't use up any resources, it's only when you're idle. Your data is always available on any computer. You can log in anywhere or use their free iPhone or BlackBerry app. All of that stuff's still there. But Carbonite Pro allows you to have one centralized dashboard, one account for all the computers in your business, whether they're in one building or across the world. And you can always see which ones are backed up. Your users can restore their files, which is always a nice feature. And you don't pay per seat. And then this is, as far as I know, the only enterprise backup where you don't pay per user. You pay just for the data you store, which makes Carbonite Pro incredibly affordable for business. Prices start as low as $10 a month. You got 10 desks with the 2 gigs each, $10 a month. That's it. I mean, it's a great deal. Carbonite Pro for business. Give it a try for 30 days absolutely free. You know, if you're your IT department, as I am here, you can do it yourself or you can get your IT department to try it out. CarbonitePro.com. 30 days absolutely free. They will help you. They will help you. Did I say 10 ducks? I meant 10 bucks a month. No waterfowl involved. 10 bucks a month. They're making fun of me in the chat room. CarbonitePro.com. It's backup done right for your small business. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and Blake in Missoula, Montana. You're next. Hi, Blake.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I purchased an HP DV7T laptop, and it was running Windows 7. It was last August. It was actually right before Windows 7 came out.
Oh, okay.
And then, of course, it came with the free upgrade to Windows 7. And
right.
Going to college and stuff, time has gotten the better of me, and I haven't done it yet. And now, of course, I have a bunch of files and whatnot. And Windows Vista has worked fine for me, but I'm wondering, you know, if I were to switch to Windows 7, is there any way to do that without losing all the files and music and photos and everything that I have on my existing computer?
Absolutely. It does it in place. If you're running from Windows 7, from Vista to Windows 7, you won't have to do anything. It'll just run. It'll upgrade your software, and you keep going with the same data.
Okay, so it shouldn't change any of the files that I've had on there?
Nope.
Okay. And then my other...
That may not be the ideal way to do it. You know, in general, when I do an operating system upgrade, I like to do it fresh. But in this case, since you're in the middle of the school year, you don't want to have to mess around. I would just do that. Eventually, you'll want to do a clean install. But that does require... You're absolutely right. That requires backing up your data and all that stuff.
Okay. And then as far as backing up data goes, I still need to... I'm going to be buying a new external hard drive, and I was just looking at some of the new Seagates that they're coming out, and I noticed that they have USB 3.0. Will those work on existing 2.0 ports? Or
Yeah, USB, they've been smart all along that when they went from USB 1.1 to 2 and now from 2 to 3, they made it downward compatible. You get none of the benefits of USB 3.
Mm-hmm.
But it will work with existing USB ports. And eventually, you know, it's a laptop, isn't it? So you're not going to be able to upgrade the laptop. But eventually, all laptops and PCs will come with USB 3. Ironically, doesn't look like Apple's going to do that anytime soon. Somebody emailed Steve Jobs saying, Steve, when are you going to put USB 3 in Macs? And I think Steve's response was, no plans at the moment. So.
Well, yeah, and then Windows 7 shouldn't have any issues running engineering computer programs that could run on Vista, should it like...
No, in fact, everything will run better. 7E is Vista. It's just polished.
Okay.
That's why it's a pretty simple upgrade. It really is Vista. They've just made it faster and better. You'll like it. I think you'll like it a lot.
Yeah, and
you might want to wait till Christmas break. I mean, if it's midterms right now, don't do it now. Wait, you can live with Vista till the Christmas break.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't had any issues with it yet, so.
Yeah, I'd stick with it. This is not a good time to be doing an upgrade.
Of course not. I'll be spending my Halloween in the library.
What are you studying, Blake?
Electrical engineering. So.
Fantastic. And what school are you going to?
I'm actually at U of M. So.
Oh, great. Well, have a great semester, and you picked a pretty good field to be going into. I think there's a lot of future for people with EE degrees.
Thank you.
Take care, Blake.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
It's nice. It's kind of flattering to have somebody who's actually studying this stuff to call me. Somebody who never studied anything. Brad, Rapid City, South Dakota. Hey, Brad, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's going well. How are you?
Not too bad. I had a quick question for you. I was thinking about rooting my Android Incredible, getting a little tired of Verizon's shenanigans on the Froyo upgrade.
Right.
And I was more curious on whether or not, since they run Flash, whether or not they'll actually be more susceptible to web-based virus and Trojan.
Isn't that interesting? If Flash, which on the desktop is horribly insecure, Adobe's had to do several updates. It's the same Flash that you're running. It's 10.1 that you're running on the phone. So in theory, yes.
Ooh.
I have to tell you that running Flash on any phone is not a great experience. I have a Droid X, very similar to your Incredible. I have 2.2, you know, the official 2.2. I put Flash on there, and it's very slow.
Yeah, it bogs it down really bad.
Yeah, Flash is a resource hog.
Yeah,
you can really see. While I may not agree with Steve Jobs' decision not to put Flash on the iPhone, you can really see there were some actual legitimate technical reasons not to do it, aside from the political reasons that I'm sure really were the real reason. So I would keep Flash off unless you have a compelling reason to do it. More and more, you don't need Flash. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Obviously, a little nervous. It's not the scariest haunted house I ever saw, although it's real people, which is a little scary.
Don't do it anymore, please. Go. Please, I know you're getting paid.
I know you're getting paid.
No.
No! The poor woman. Oh, my goodness. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. We were watching in the break, we were watching a clip from Ellen of a haunted house. Ellen sent one of her writers through a haunted house, and apparently quite a scary scene, and quite funny to watch, too. That's a YouTube video, I think, yeah. I think so. I think it's on the Ellen channel on YouTube. Do you want? I suspect more and more, especially if you're younger, you watch TV more and more on YouTube and websites like Hulu and ABC and CBS.com than you do on TV, and that's the idea behind Google TV, which is now starting to emerge. You can get it on a Sony. You can get it on your. Sony Blu-rays and Sony TVs, and I just got the Logitech Review, which Logitech is selling kind of as a Harmony remote / Google TV. It's $300. It's not cheap. Not cheap at all, but it does put Google TV on your big screen TV and the internet on your big screen TV, and I'll give you a review. I won't do it today, but I will give you a review of that tomorrow on the show. So please tune in tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about the Logitech Review, although, as I said earlier in the show, thumbnail review wouldn't run out and buy it today. Maybe not tomorrow either. Let's see. We want to say hello to Dick DiBartolo. He's our Giz Whiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He does a daily gadget podcast with me called The Daily Gizwiz every Monday through Friday at twit.tv/DGW. And he's joining us right now to give us a little gadget review. Dick, I can't hear you. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
You were just so quiet.
Oh, yeah, no. That lady's screaming. Is she watching The Daily Gizwiz?
That is so funny. So that she, I guess she's a writer for Ellen DeGeneres, and they were mean. They sent her through a haunted house and videotaped it. And she,
because it's the kind of meanness that you would do yourself. Come on.
I couldn't stop laughing.
I know. How about Lisa? Can we do something like that to Lisa? Lisa would probably scare the people in
she'd
there.
She'd punch the ghost out. It'd be all over. Lisa's a CEO of my network, and she's a little bit scary herself. She's tough.
Oh, yeah.
You don't mess with Lisa.
Yeah.
No,
absolutely.
So what do you got for us today, Dick?
Well, you know, Leo, I thought I'd mention we did it at Twit Cottage when I was out there, but we didn't tell the radio audience about that new Acer Timeline X.
You showed me this thing. That is gorgeous, and that is kind of timely because everybody's talking about this little thin and light MacBook Air right now, but Acer's got something that's amazing.
Yes, exactly. Same screen size. It's 11.6 inches, and there are what they basically have done is taking their netbook size and format and made a really high-powered laptop in the netbook size. As I said, an 11.6-inch screen. The new one has the i7 processor.
Much faster processor than the MacBook Air.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. 500-gigabyte hard drive, 4 gigabytes of RAM. BGN Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, webcam, Dolby Sound, HDMI out.
Now, here's what I'm interested in.
Yes.
They're claiming 8 hours battery life. What are you getting?
Well, you know what? The funny thing is, Leo, both ways, my Continental flights had DirecTV. So I had bought it on the flight specifically to play movies going. What I should have done, I should have just let the movies run,
right,
even though I wasn't watching them.
Well, did it last the whole flight?
You know, I did not do that.
You didn't even use it. You watched the TV in the back of the seat.
Exactly. Exactly.
I have to say it's beautiful. And it is, if you want a Windows version of the MacBook Air, this seems like the closest thing. It's an Acer Aspire Timeline. And which model number do you have?
You know, Leo, it's very confusing. The line itself is the 1830,
okay,
but they make it with the i3 and the i5. So if you want it with the new i7, it's the 68U11-8.
The 68U11-8. Well, that's a nice catchy.
Yes.
That just leaps to the tongue. Just have,
you know, the ace of jitterbug. Ace of something.
Yeah, give it a name, dudes.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, do you have the 68U11? No, I think we have the 6U966K.
Now, the Apple MacBook Air starts at $999, and depending on how big the screen and how fast the processor and how much storage, it can go all the way up to $1,600. How much is the timeline?
Okay, so their line starts at $600 with the i3,
okay,
$700 with the i5, and a little bit under $900 with the i7.
So it is a lot less, although, you know, i5 is probably fairly comparable to the Core 2 that's in the MacBook Air. Do they use real hard drives or solid-state drives?
They're using real hard drives, 500 gigabytes on the i7 laptop.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So it's pretty neat.
I think that's one of the, I wish, you know, I'd had this MacBook Air when you were here with your timeline.
We could have done a test
because I have to say, and I was talking about this earlier this hour, the solid state drive in the MacBook Air really speeds it up. It's more than just the processor that makes the difference. It's the solid state processor.
And how much memory is in that?
I upgraded to 4 gigs for $100. It comes with 2 gigs, but for additional $100, you can put 4 gigs of memory in there.
Okay.
And a 64-gig hard drive. Oh, you mean you're talking about the hard drive? Yeah, well, I got the 64-gig hard drive, which is, it's funny because don't you remember not so long ago where a 2-gig hard drive was big? And now we're saying 64 gigs paltry?
Well, you know what? A 64-gigabyte hard drive when it first came out was like $800 on its own.
I know.
So what did it add to the cost of
That's what it comes with.
They don't offer it
with a regular hard drive at all.
Oh.
You can't, and that's one of the reasons it's so thin and light, is that there's no hard drive enclosure at all in there. I like it. I'm very happy, and I've put a lot of programs on there, and I still have 30 gigs left. What you can't do and what you won't do is store a lot of music or movies or TV shows or any of that rich data on there. You'll have to put those either on an external hard drive or something else. Dick DiBartolo is at gizwiz.biz. That's his website. You can watch the podcast at twit.tv/DGW. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.